It is Tuesday, March 27th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, NATO expels Russian diplomats following the poisoning of a former Russian spy and his daughter in England.
My guess is that the Russians, if they did it, probably didn't expect this sort of coordinated response.
The White House denies the claim of a porn star that she had an affair with President Donald Trump, and singer Taylor Swift releases a new single. It's all ahead. NATO announced Tuesday it's expelling seven Russian diplomats and denying accreditation to three others following the poisoning of a former Russian double agent and his daughter in Britain. The decision occurs after more than 20 countries have expelled dozens of Russian diplomats. The U.S. expelled the most Russians, 60, on Monday. Raj Shah is a White House spokesman.
We want to have a cooperative relationship. The president wants to work with Russia, but their actions sometimes don't allow that to happen. The poisoning in the UK that has kind of led to today's announcement was a very brazen action. It was a reckless action. It endangered not just two individuals who were poisoned, but many civilians, many innocent civilians. And this is not the type of conduct that the United States or allies can accept. But the president still remains open to working with the Russians on areas of mutual concern, counterterrorism, for example, and others. That's really up to the Russians to decide.
U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley called the use of a nerve agent in Britain part of a pattern of bad judgment exhibited by Russia, which called the mass expulsion provocative and promised a symmetrical response, insisting it had no involvement in the poisoning. Stephen Fortescue, an honorary associate professor at the University of New South Wales in Russian politics and economics, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the expulsions are the latest sign of a return to a frosty Cold War era climate.
In a sense, it's symbolic, but probably has some practical significance as well. If the attention or those people being thrown out are, as everybody stresses, intelligence officers undercover, I presume it will have some severe operational significance. But I think really that we've been in something like a Cold War situation with Russia for some time. This certainly hasn't helped.
What is your view about this use of this nerve agent in Britain?
Common sense would lead me to think that the Russians did it.
Why did Moscow do it?
My guess, if we assume that they did, there are plenty of people who don't, obviously, but if we assume that they did, my guess is that, yeah, they want defectors to know that, you know, we'll get you in the end, or we have the choice of getting you in the end, and that's a message not just to existing ones, but to possible future ones. My guess is that the Russians, if they did it, probably didn't expect this sort of coordinated response. They probably thought, oh, yeah, we'll bump off another fellow in UK. UK doesn't count for very much in the world these days. I'll jump up and down, but in the end, who cares? Again, I'm suspecting that the Russians, if that was their calculation, clearly they got it wrong. There's a much bigger, more coordinated response than, according to my suggestion, they expected. And it's not the first time, because you get the impression that they didn't expect such a coordinated and persistent Western reaction to the seizure of Crimea and the events in Donbass as well. So if I had a more general comment, it would be, is there something wrong with their analysis of this situation within their own system that leads them seemingly to underestimate Western responses?
Is this a reflection of Vladimir Putin's policy toward the West?
I guess we can say Putin's February 2007 speech in Munich, where he basically said, look, I've tried to be friendly with you people, and you've rebuffed me completely and constantly, and so I've had enough. We're going to go our own way. We're going to do our thing. That pretty much signaled what's happened ever since, I would have thought. And I think the Russians might underestimate the extent to which the West is able to come up with coordinated responses. I think a lot of Putin's reaction back then, say if we date it to 2007, was frustration, but also a reading that the West was weak and that we can basically get away with a lot more than what we used to get away with. The West is weak, its reactions will not be strong. I mean, some will say that our reactions still aren't terribly strong, but they're probably more coordinated and, as I said, more persistent than Putin expected.
British Prime Minister Theresa May said Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia remain hospitalized and critically ill from the Novichok nerve agent. Doctors said their condition is unlikely to change in the near future, and they may never fully recover. Time now for social media. Trending today is hashtag repeal the Second Amendment. Former Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens writes in an opinion piece in the New York Times that the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution should be repealed. That amendment cites a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The 97-year-old retired justice writes that the March for Our Lives demonstrations and civic engagement in the wake of last month's Parkland, Florida school shooting demand our respect. He further writes, concerned that a national standing army might pose a threat to the security of separate states led to the adoption of that amendment. Today, that concern is a relic of the 18th century. Joy Reid tweets, retired Justice Stevens goes there. There will be hysterics, and that's unfortunate because this country desperately needs a sensible discussion on guns and a rational social compact. But Far Left Watch tweets, repeat after me, nobody wants to repeal the Second Amendment. Political Amelia tweets, the majority of us aren't asking to repeal the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment says the people have the right to a well-regulated militia. I'd hardly call civilians having access to military-style weapons well-regulated. But Corey Jones tweets, don't be fooled by the talking points. It's never been about the AR-15 or large magazines or the background checks. The ultimate goal of the left is to repeal the Second Amendment and take away your right to own a firearm. They don't care about your rights. Also trending is Alton Sterling. Louisiana's attorney general has decided not to file charges in connection with the case, which involves the shooting of a black man by white police officers. Sterling was fatally shot in 2016 by Baton Rouge officers responding to a call about a man who had threatened someone with a gun. Shannon Watts tweets, the officer put a gun to the head of Alton Sterling and said, I'll kill you, expletive. 90 seconds later, he was dead. We can't talk about gun violence in America without talking about racism. Mike tweets, Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry made the correct decision in regards to Alton Sterling. There were multiple attempts by law enforcement to subdue Sterling. He was tased and a loaded revolver was found in his pocket. When you respect law enforcement, you don't get shot. That's a look at social media. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. The FBI arrests a man in connection with suspicious packages sent to the Washington area military sites. Afghan women join an anti-war protest in Helmand. Russian President Vladimir Putin vows to punish those responsible for a Siberian mall fire. And President Trump's approval ratings are on the upswing. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study published in the journal Cell Metabolism suggests cutting back on calories in the daily diet may not only benefit the obese, but also those who aren't looking to lose weight. Analyzing data from the calorie or comprehensive assessment of the long-term effects of reducing intake of energy trial, the study authors found that aging and metabolism slowed in those who decreased their daily caloric intake by 15% over a 2-year period. They discovered that restrictions in calorie consumption also provided some protection against neurological conditions considered to be age-related, such as Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases, as well as others like cancer and diabetes. Past research indicates a slower metabolism can be beneficial for healthy aging and perhaps a longer life. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Silicon Valley companies are attracted to Austin, Texas. The Trump White House was on the defensive Monday, the day after adult film star Stormy Daniels spoke about her alleged affair with President Donald Trump back in 2006. Daniels detailed her involvement with Trump in an interview with the CBS program 60 Minutes. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
At the White House, spokesman Raj Shah was peppered with questions about the Stormy Daniels story and her alleged affair with Donald Trump nearly 12 years ago.
With respect to that interview, I will say the president strongly, clearly, and has consistently denied these underlying claims, and the only person who's been inconsistent is the one making the claims.
In her interview with 60 Minutes, Daniels spoke in detail about the alleged affair with Trump that she says began in 2006. Daniels said a stranger approached her in 2011 and threatened her about going public over the alleged affair.
A guy walked up on me and said to me, "Leave Trump alone, forget the story." And then he leaned around and looked at my daughter and said, "A beautiful little girl, it'd be a shame if something happened to her mom." And then he was gone.
Daniels' attorney, Michael Avenatti, told ABC that more information will be forthcoming.
There's going to be a lot of evidence that's going to come to light in the coming weeks and months, and we're confident that when all of the facts are laid bare for the American people, they are going to learn exactly what happened here.
In a Monday tweet, President Trump made a reference to fake news, but no specific mention of the interview. Trump friend Christopher Ruddy spoke with the president over the weekend.
Yeah, I can only tell you what he told me. He said he thought that much of the Stormy Daniels stuff was a political hoax. Again, those were his words.
Legal experts say Daniels may be vulnerable to hefty fines now for breaking a non-disclosure agreement with Trump attorney Michael Cohen. But Cohen's payment of $130,000 to Daniels could expose him to possible campaign finance violations, says legal analyst David Abraham.
The payoff for the silence came through, potentially at least, what was the campaign committee and would constitute an unreported financial expenditure by the committee.
The focus on the Daniels interview is yet another political distraction for a White House in the midst of a national security makeover. John Bolton is replacing H.R. McMaster as National Security Advisor, and Mike Pompeo is slated to take the place of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, who was fired by President Trump. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Austin, Texas is not California's Silicon Valley technology corridor, but companies from Silicon Valley and other major U.S. hubs are taking notice of Austin's growing tech scene. Austin's lower cost of living and doing business, combined with its smaller size, are just a few reasons that people are attracted to the area. VOA's Elizabeth Lee explains other reasons that tech companies are opening up shop there.
Austin, Texas, a city known as the live music capital of the world, is evolving into something else.
I've heard people call it Silicon Ranch. I think it's kind of hilarious.
Startups and big companies are taking up office space downtown, and more are being built.
I look at all the companies that have already moved here or are in the process of moving here. Google and Apple, two of the big leaders in the tech, already have large offices down here.
Offices ingrained with Silicon Valley tech culture.
It's just a logo.
Cambodian-American Sumat Lam is originally from the San Francisco Bay Area and works for a Silicon Valley-based company that opened an office in Austin. The company transferred him 4 years ago.
I definitely was confused when I was offered the role out of college for Austin. You think about cowboys, you think about everything's bigger in Texas.
But after Lam started living here,
it's not as embedded in the Texas stereotype as people presume. You know, people from all over are coming. People are bringing in the culture and their influences from Boston and New York and Philadelphia.
Many Texans consider the Austin-based computer firm Dell as the flagship company that gave birth to an entire tech ecosystem in the city.
There was a thing called Dellionaires. And so the people who became millionaires after they worked at Dell, and then they went out and they started a bunch of companies.
With the University of Texas here, plus the annual technology conference and music festival South by Southwest, the city's tech presence on the map grows by bringing in tech experts and entrepreneurs from around the globe. Those in Austin's tech industry say people in the music business also fuel their industry here.
A lot of my friends are musicians and they also work in the tech field, so there's a huge overlap.
There's a strong foundational tech base that's here. There's that creative aspect, and really bringing that all together, I think, is a powerful combination.
Lamb says while Austin is home to Latin Americans and Europeans, he would like to see more people who look like him.
When I walk out on the street, let's just say, I'm more than likely to be one of my only minorities sort of on any given street or any given room.
While he misses Cambodian food, Lam says he would recommend Austin to anyone who wants to relocate. The standard of living is high. And Lam says people in Austin have always made him feel welcome. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Austin.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
This is International Edition. One of the most popular singers in the United States has released a new single from her hit album. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me with the details.
For today, we've got something for the Swifties. That's what Taylor Swift calls her fans around the world. Taylor has put out a brand new single off her latest album, Reputation, and the new single is called Delicate. So we're going to check that out and then find out what's happening with Taylor Swift these days.
For the best, my reputation's never been worse, so you must like me for me. Yeah, I want you. We can't make any promises now, can we, babe? But you can make me dream. Is it cool that I said all that? Is it chill that you're in my...
So what is happening with Taylor Swift these days?
Well, I'm so glad you asked, Sarah. First of all, congratulations to Taylor Swift. Her new album, Reputation, is the first album in over 2 years to hit the 2 million sales mark in such a short amount of time. Adele's album, 25, was the last album to do that in 2015. But Taylor's albums, all of her albums, have sold over 2 million copies, every single one of them, which is quite an accomplishment if you think about it, because a lot of artists spend their whole career trying to sell a million copies. But her latest, in just 16 weeks, has gone to 2 million in sales. It sold a million its first week. So she's doing very, very well. I'd say the Reputation Tour begins on May 8th in Arizona. It's a stadium tour. Tickets will range from as low as $50 to as high as $500. Billboard magazine has projected this just might be the biggest grossing concert tour ever. We shall see. Some of the tickets are selling slowly because of the higher prices. But as the dates get closer, I'm sure that the tickets will all be gone. Taylor Swift has been involved for the last 2 years now with a British actor, Joe Alwyn. She's got this thing for British guys, I guess. and so that's been going well. She's kept a low key and low profile on the relationship, but she spent a lot of time in London.
She has. I mean, compared to some of her previous boyfriends you heard a lot about, she's been very quiet about this.
There's been some high profile guys, you know, I mean, like John Mayer and Calvin Harris, and the list goes on with all the guys, Harry Styles and you name it. But it's been British guys the last few. So that's the trend that she continues to follow. Taylor Swift came under fire recently over the weekend because she sent out an Instagram post in support of the March of Our Lives, which was the big march for gun regulations here in the United States. The kids all gathered. We had 800,000 marchers in D.C. alone. And Taylor wrote on her Instagram account that she thinks that kids should be able to go to school and feel safe and not have to fear for their lives. And we do need stronger gun regulations. And a lot of people on the internet responded by saying she's only seeking publicity. That's why she wrote that and said that. There are haters out there. But Taylor backed her words with a generous donation. We don't know the exact amount that she donated, but she has donated a lot of money to the cause for those kids from Parkland, Florida, who lost 17 students and teachers in the tragic shooting that took place there about a month ago. But, you know, she's always given money generously to hospitals. She gave to a cardiac wing in a hospital in Los Angeles. She's paid for students' tuition in college who are struggling to pay for tuition. So she's always been very generous. So I think this is more of the same from Taylor Swift. And I like the new song, Delicate. It's a great sounding song. It's a little bit retro for Taylor Swift, but, you know, it's refreshing to hear off the Reputation album because she's changed her direction totally. I mean, she started off country, and now some would say she's kind of really urban R&B with twerking in some of the videos and whatnot. So it's kind of a different Taylor.
Well, she lives in New York, or at least some part of the time.
Yeah, she's got a couple places in New York, a couple places in Los Angeles. I think she owns at least one home in London, so she can be close to her boyfriend. And she's got property around the world. She's worth a lot of money, and she continues to make a lot of money. She made, $130 million a couple years ago. So she's doing just fine, and I'm sure with the tour, that's where they make a lot of money, she'll do very, very well. Reputation is the name of the new album. We're talking about Taylor Swift.
All right. Thanks very much, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings. And that is our show. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In an effort to limit resources that fuel the civil war in South Sudan, the United States Department of Commerce has imposed licensing requirements on 15 of the country's oil-linked entities whose revenues have contributed to the ongoing crisis in South Sudan. This means that all exports, re-exports, and transfers to these entities of any items originating in the United States will now require an export license. According to the World Bank, with oil revenue accounting for almost all of its exports and around 60% of its gross domestic product, South Sudan is the world's most oil-dependent country. Through this action, the United States hopes to increase pressure to end the country's five-year-old civil war and the resulting humanitarian crisis. In December 2013, less than 18 months after it declared its independence from Sudan, a power struggle between President Salva Kiir and Vice President Riek Machar spiraled into civil war. The continued fighting has cost the lives of tens of thousands of people and led to a devastated economy, human rights abuses, hunger, and malnutrition. One-third of the population has been displaced by the violence, nearly 2 million internally and more than 2 million who have fled to neighboring countries. The 15 entities include South Sudan's Ministries of Mining and Petroleum and state oil firm Nile Petroleum. Also included are Dar Petroleum Operating Company, oil distributor Nayakek and Sons, Greater Pioneer Operating Company, Juba Petrotech Technical Services, and Sud Petroleum Operating Company. The listed entities are a source of substantial revenue for the government of South Sudan, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert. Unfortunately, the South Sudanese government and corrupt official actors use this revenue to purchase weapons and fund irregular militias that undermine the peace, security, and stability of South Sudan, rather than support the welfare and current emergency food needs of the South Sudanese people. The government of South Sudan can do better, said Heather Nauert. As the largest donor of aid to South Sudan, the United States is proud to uphold humanitarian values and deliver vital assistance. The government of South Sudan must not squander that generosity and should take concrete steps to provide for the vast needs of the South Sudanese people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.